Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Okay. So I'll start with a couple of questions.
The socks in the far south end now.
If I can read Latin.
So I can almost see about this.
Let's do this one. Yamana klatbutne nomirs cilvēks vai dzīvnieks kā būtu pareizi rīkoties no budistu veidokļa apraudāt lasīt kaut kādas noteiktas? What's noteiktas?
Specific.
Ah, specific, right, right. Noteiktas mantras, kādu laiku neaiztikt ķermeni. Okay. So that's the question in English. If someone in my family or close to me dies, either an animal or a person, what would be the correct way in Buddhism to deal with that? Apraudāt means to grieve.
Yeah.
Yeah, to grieve. Read some kind of liturgy or mantras or not touch the body for some time. How's that?
Excellent.
Pretty good. Okay, I'm getting better. It's interesting how the language increases so quickly when I'm here. It's really lovely, lovely.
Interesting, kā valoda jau to domājies, kamēr esmu šeit.
I'm sure if I stayed 5 years, I'd be fluent.
Es paliktu vēl 5 gadus, es jau runātu tekoši.
And all that lovely brown bread.
Un ak šī parvīgā rupmājas.
You've got the best bread in the world here.
Un šeit ir vislabākā mājas pasaulē.
Bet es vēl neesmu dabūjis skāp gurķi. Anyway, I'm not supposed to say that. I'm a monk. So death. Okay, someone dies. How do you handle that in Buddhism? A lot of that is cultural. You'll find different cultural interpretations of what should be done after a being dies.
Tas, kas tiek darīts pēc nāves, ļoti lielā mērā ir saistīts ar kultūru.
So for instance, the Tibetans have the, I think it's 49 days of bardo recitations and so on. Theravada doesn't have that.
Piemēram, tibetiešiem ir 49 dienu periods, kurā ir šis bardo stāvoklis un tiek lasīta īpaša grāmata vai teksti, bet Theravādas budismā nekā tāda nav.
So generally people follow the custom of their country and of their culture.
Un kopumā cilvēki seko savas valsts un kultūras tradīcijām.
Now, last night I mentioned what I did with my mom, and I didn't want to go the way my culture does it, because my culture basically gets rid of the body as fast as possible into the mortuary. And I wanted to contemplate my mom's dying and the whole, because it's such a powerful situation.
Un vakar es minēju, ko es darīju, kad mana māte nomira. Un es nerīkojos tā, kā manā kultūrā būtu pieņemts, jo manā kultūrā ir pieņemts pēc iespējas ātrāk atbrīvoties no līķa, to kremējot, bet to es negribēju darīt. Es gribēju pārdomāt nāvi.
So basically, most of the rituals around someone dying, it's for the living.
Un pamatā tie rituāli, kas ir saistīti ar mirušajiem, ir priekš dzīvajiem.
So I'll tell you how our monastic community handles that.
Un es varu jums izstāstīt, kā mūsu mūku kopienā tiek, kas te, kā mēs rīkojamies šādos gadījumos.
It's a rather interesting example of we had a Canadian monk who had an aneurysm about a year and a half ago. He was practicing in a cave and they found him dead by the mouth of his cave, and they think he had an aneurysm, a broken vessel in the brain.
Mm. Un bija kāds gadījums, kad kāds kanādiešu mūks praktizēja vienatnē avā, un viņu atrada pie šīs avas ieejas ar aneirismu, jeb asins izpaudumu smadzenēs.
And he was going to come and join the monastery, and then I got an email saying that he had just died, so that was rather sad. We were looking forward to having him at the monastery in Canada.
Un viņš gatavojās pievienoties klosterim, un mēs viņu gaidījām, bet tad es saņēmu e-pastu, kas vēstīja par viņa nādu, un tas bija visnotai skolu.
So he died in Thailand, so they took his body to the main Western monastery, Wat Nanachat, and they had they cremated his body they cremated his body in the middle of the monastery on an open funeral pyre.
Un viņš nomira taizemē, un viņa ķermenis tika pārvests uz galveno rietumnieku klosteri, un tur šis ķermenis tika sadedzināts atklātā kremēšanas sārta.
So, and there are, I think, about 100 monks? Maybe,
probably.
Ajahn was there then. About 100 monks sitting around and lay people, and we did our ritual chanting. They burned the body, and I wasn't there, but I've been to burnings. And then while the body is burning, it becomes a contemplation on death. So it's very open. It's not like in an oven where you burn people in the city. So it was a very, very powerful contemplation of seeing a friend dead and then the body being burned.
Un tur šajā procesā piedalījās ap 100 mūku un arī vaicīgie cilvēki. Un šis te sārts bija atklāts, nevis tā kā mēs esam pieraduši rietumos, kad ir tikai noslēgta kremētava, kurā neviens īsti šo procesu neredz. Un tādējādi, es gan pats nepiedalījos šajā procesā, bet tur bija pat godinājumās Jāna Dasano, un tā bija visnotaļ spēcīga meditācija par draugu nāku.
You okay with the windows there? Are you dry?
I'm gonna get them closed, it would be less noise.
Huh?
It would be less noisy.
Yeah, maybe you close the windows, otherwise you won't hear me.
Būtu derīgi attaisīt fokus citādāk, mēs varam vienu
fokus nesadzirdēt. Yeah, so I couldn't do that in Canada. I'd get arrested.
Man tas neizdotos Kanādā, jo man par to arestēt.
So in what we do in our monastery, say if I haven't had a monk die in the monastery, but if a lay person dies, they go to a normal mortuary. We have a funeral service, and then they're cremated usually by the fifth day or something like that.
Un ja mūsu kopienā nomirst kāds rietumnieks, tad ir parastā procedūra, ka ķermenis tiek aizvests uz kremētavu, ir apmēram 5 dienu procesu, kad šo ķermeni varbūt nenestiek, un tad tas ir beidzot tiek kremēts.
So it's a very, very cultural thing. One of the nice rituals that they have in Southeast Asia, in Thailand and Sri Lanka, are to make offerings 7 days after the person has died, to make offerings to the monastery of food and requisites, and then each year to go to the monastery and offer a meal to the monks and have a dharma talk on that occasion of the anniversary of the dying.
Un Dienvidaustrumu Āzijā un Šrilankā ir tāda ļoti jauka tradīcija, ka tad, kad nomirst kāds cilvēks, tad septiņas dienas pēc nāves tiek veikti piedāvājumi klosterim un nākošos gadus šajā nāves gadadienā tiek apciemots klosters vai klausītos dāmas runu.
But the most important thing in terms of dharma is to contemplate with birth there is death. With a beginning there's end. If there's a start there's an end. With birth there's death. That's the real contemplation. And the Buddha's realization of enlightenment is often couched as the realization of the deathless. So you contemplate with birth there is death, and then you think, oh, so what's the deathless?
Un dāmas kontekstā nāve parasti nozīmē apcerēt to, ka ja kaut kas ir piedzimis, tas arī nomirst, ja ir rašanās, tad ir izbeigšanās. Un Buda runāja, vai Budas sakarā tiek runāts par nemirstošo, ja to, kas nemirst. Un šajā kontekstā ir interesanti un vērtīgi pārdomāt, kas tad ir tas, kas nemirst.
So if you take that contemplation, you think, well, what is it that is not born and does not die? And the clue, of course, is awareness. That awareness is the gateway to that realization.
Un tad mēs apceram, kas ir tas, kas nedzimst un kas nemirst. Un te galvenais pavadiens, protams, ir apzināšanās un apzināšanās.
So the contemplative, you know, like the meditator gets the mind slowly, slowly, more and more quiet, and then usually awareness turns back on awareness. You get like, when you begin meditation, it's like you're doing this practice and that practice, and after a while doing all these practices, you stop. You think, well, what is this awareness? So we say the mind focuses on the mind.
Un meditētājs pakāpeniski arvien vairāk nomierina savu prātu. Un nonāk pie tā, ka viņš tieši uzlūko savu apziņu. Un tad sanāk tā, ka apziņa, apziņa, apziņa.
Apziņa, apziņa, apziņa. It's true. So there language stops. You can't say anymore. And then, like one teacher describes it, there is waiting, but waiting for nothing.
Un šajā valodā, šajā brīdī, vārdi un valoda vairs nespēja mums aizvest tālāk, un tad mēs nonākam pie tā, kas ir aizvārdiem.
Next one?
Jā, nākošais jautājums.
Jūs teicāt, un tad sirds atverās, kāda ir tā sajūta? Kā sprādziens? Kā uguns? Vai gaisma? Kā es varēšu atpazīt, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Atpazīt, jā? Kā mana sirds tiešām atverās? I feel like a little kid at school doing my Latvian lessons. English. You said that the heart opens. In what way does it blast open? Is it with the fire and light? How will I know that my heart is opened? It's not really, like, let's say you're walking along the road and there's a dog and the dog barks.
Teiksim, jūs liet pa ceļu, redzat suni un šis suns rej.
And then you, woo, be careful.
Un tad jūs attiecaties, ka nu, tagad jābūt uzmanīgam.
And then the dog wags its tail, comes up to you, lays on its stomach and says,
Bet suns pienāk klāt, lūncinot asti, pagriež jums vēderu un ir jūsu rīcībā.
And you kneel down, you scratch it, you say, nice doggy, nice doggy. That's the open heart. It's really not more complicated.
Un jūs pielietaties pie viņa, paglaudat viņu, un lūk, ir atvērtā sirds.
We have it all the time.
Tā kā tas notiek ar mums visu laiku.
But when you say open the heart, sounds you're going to get some kind of like, mystical experience of universal love embracing all beings through all universes through all time.
Bet kad mēs dzirdam, ka jā, ar sirds mums varbūt šķiet, ka mums jāra kaut kāda universāla mīlestība, kurā jāietver viss visums un visas būtnes.
And then the danger is you start to try to manufacture some fantastic experience.
Un tad rodas bīstamība, ka mēs cenšamies safabricēt kaut kādas fantastiskas pieredzes.
Yeah, I personally certainly feel a sensation here when I do practices of love, of loving kindness, or I connect to people. I certainly have a vibration here. It's not spectacular, but certainly is definitely a feeling.
Oh, kad es veicu sirds praksis, tad es pilnīgi noteikti jūtu kaut ko sirds rajonā. Un tas nav nekas tāds izcils grandios, bet tur ir kaut kāda vibrācija.
So I suppose I've just become more aware of that over time and cultivated the perceptions which makes that stronger. So it's quite an obvious feeling in my heart now.
Un iespējams, ka es esmu to laika gaitā attīstījis un padarījis priekš sevis uzskatāmāk, un tāpēc šīs sajūtas manā sirdī ir vieglāk sajūtams un pamanāms.
And it's a feeling I can turn to when I, like, if I'm annoyed at something or worried about something, I can hear my mind thinking, and I can bring my attention down to here and function from here.
Un tajā brīdī, kad es par kaut ko saskaišos vai citādi esmu norūpējies, tad es varu apzināti atgriezties šajā sirds līmenī un apzināti tur pabūt.
And that's why the practice I recommend to you is one that I've developed, where I basically use perceptions of affection, imagery of affection, and just viscerally feel this area. So that's why I say breathe here, bring up an image, but don't try to manufacture anything. Just the fact that you make intentions of kindness and goodwill is good enough. But that begins to bring consciousness to that mode of interpretation.
Un tāpēc es iesaku tādu veidu meditāciju, ko es minēju, proti izmantot tēlus, kas palīdz jūsos radīt siltas jūtas sirdī un sajust šo te labestību caur muguras smadzenēm, jeb ķermenī. Un tad jums kļūst vieglāk to sajust arī turpmāk.
But it's all the time. Notice when someone is kind to you, you know, they're considerate to you, and they help you in some way. Your heart opens in gratitude, or someone falls, and you think, oh, how can I help you? Your heart opens in compassion. So there's all kinds of ways our heart opens, but it's really a sense of empathy with life.
Dažādi brīži, kad mūsu sirds atverās vai no, kad kāds ir ļoti laipns pret mums, par mums rūpējās, vai mēs redzam, ka kāds pakrīt un mēs automātiski tiecamies cilvēkam palīdzēt. Un šis sirds siltums faktiski ir empātija pret dzīvi.
All right. One more.
Vēl viens jautājums.
Mēs dziedam, lieku bēdu zem akmeņa, pāri gāju dziedādama. Kāda būtu budisma
atteiksme
pret šo saturu? No. Yeah? Anyway, you do the English for me. I put my sorrows under a stone and go walking along singing. Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So, two languages. It's a very difficult question because there's no context.
That's such a song, Latvian song.
Yeah, but there's no context of the person.
That's not my question.
So the For instance, if you say that to someone who is just come back from the war in Afghanistan, who's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, they'll just put it under a stone and sing along. You know, the guy, you know, that's what they do to soldiers. They say, oh, don't make it a problem. But the guy needs therapy, right? Or someone else who's just complaining about the government or the rain, it's raining too much, it's raining too much. He says, don't make it a problem. So you need the context of the person to really give an answer to that.
Jā, un te ir nepieciešams konkrētā jautātāja konteksts, jo ir, teiksim, karavīrs, kurš atgriežas no Afganistānas un viņam ir posttraumatiskais sindroms, jo viņš ir saskāries to ar šausmu lietām, un ja mēs viņam, teiksim, nu, paliec savu bēdu zemapmiņu un ej pārdziedādam. Viņam ir nepieciešama terapija. Savukārt, ja cilvēks vienkārši sūdzās par valdību vai, to, ka vai par to, ka līst lietas, nu, tas var būt vairāk vietā.
So, you know, one of the, my first teacher, he once said to me, this is way back in India when I first met Buddhism, I wasn't a monk yet, but he said, if there's one word the Buddha might have used the most, it would be, it depends.
Tad viens no maniem pirmajiem skolotājiem Indijā mēdza teikt, ka iespējams, ka viens no Budas biežāk lietotajiem vārdiem varētu būt bijis, un es tagad teikšu nepareizi latviski, tas atkarājas, ja tas ir atkarīgs no.
Yeah, it depends. Because it's true, isn't it? You know that's. I think that's why I really like Theravada Buddhism, because it's very pragmatic. It's not abstract. It's really about my mind, my life, our lives, and how to be free from suffering. It's very pragmatic.
Un tas ir tas, kas man patīk Theravada Buddhismā, ka tas ir ļoti pragmatisks un praktisks un attiecas tieši uz konkrēto prāta stāvokli un to, kā to praktiski mainīt.
So the from our text, from the Pali Canon that we use, that it's very apparent that the Buddha's teaching developed over time in specific situations dealing with specific problems that people had. He didn't evolve a kind of a intellectual philosophy like Heidegger or something like that from just brain stuff and put it down. He had his enlightenment, he had his experience, he understood suffering, and then he tried to figure out where other people are suffering and say, no, look at it this way. But he might teach a different thing to one person from another person. So it depends.
Un tas ir skaidri redzams no Pali kanona, tradicionālās Theravādas budisma mācības avota, ka Budas mācības kopums radās viņam cenšoties palīdzēt konkrētiem cilvēkiem atkarībā no situācijas. Un tas nav tas gadījums, ka rodas filosofija, kā Heidegger gadījumā, kad viņš kaut ko prātā sacer un tad to uzliek uz papīra. Budas filosofija, ja būtas mācība, radās viņam sasniedzot apskaidrību, un tad palīdzot konkrētiem cilvēkiem un domājot, kā konkrētā cilvēka gadījumā vislabāk palīdzēt.
And there's one really extraordinary in the early teachings where he begins teaching contemplation of death. And then he goes away from the monastery and the monks are so diligent in contemplating death and contemplating an incorrect contemplation of death that they begin to kill themselves. He comes back, he says, where are all the monks? Well, they were doing death contemplation, and he changes to mindfulness of breathing. It's extraordinary, kind of. How accurate it is, I don't know, but it kind of indicates that the Buddha was figuring out what works and what doesn't work in his teaching.
Ir interesants stāsts par to, kas reiz notika, kad Buda sāka mācīt saviem mācekļiem kādā vietā par pārdomas par nāvi. Un viņš bija spiests pārtraukt šīs mācības, lai dotos uz citu vietu. Un šie mācekļi bija tik ļoti uzcītīgi, nepareizi meditējot un pārdomājot, ka viņi sāka viens otru nogalināt. Un kad Buda atgriezās, viņš brīnījās, kur ir palikuši viņa mācekļi. Un tad viņš saprata, ka viņam ir jāmaina tas mācību temats uz elpas apzināšanos. Un tā kā varētu teikt, ka Buda skatījās, kas darbojās un kas ne.
So I don't know how much truth there is in that text, but certainly, like in the development of the rules, the Buddha, there's one rule that has seven addendums to it. As the monks live, the rule didn't work. They had to make this addendum, that addendum, until the rule had a more kind of relevant structure to the life of the monasteries. So again, the teaching is very pragmatic that way.
Un es nezinu, cik daudz ir patiesības šajā stāstā, bet no tiem likumiem, kas ir domāti priekš mūkiem, ir viens piemērs, kurā ir redzams, ka ir tātad viens uzvedības noteikums, un tam laika gaitā ir septiņi tad pielikumi vai papildinājumi, kur ir redzams, ka mūki ir centušies pielāgot, paskaidrot un padarīt to labāku, piemērojot vajadzīgajiem kontekstam, kas darbojās.
So, interesting, like I'm just kind of watching, because I don't plan retreats, I don't know what I'm going to say, but obviously I have a good background, but I find myself really shying away from too much theory.
Kad es vadu retrītus, es iepriekš neplānoju tēmas, par kurām es mācīšu. Protams, man gan ir pieredze retrītu vadīšanā, bet es cenšos izvairīties no teorētiskām tēmām.
I used to give all kinds of lists. I was really good memorizing lists, and I'd give one night one list, another night another list, another night another list, and then people said they were getting indigestion. Too much information.
Es mēdzu reizēm katru vakaru sniegt daudzus un dažādus sarakstus, jo man padevās iegaumēšana, bet cilvēkiem pēc šiem retrītiem vai šo retrītu laikā sāka sūdzēties, ka viņi nespēja to visu sagramot. Informācijas pārāk daudz.
So what I say is a very, very small part of the teaching, and to pick up like this text, the Ajahn Sumedho book, and people have complimented, I'll write to the people who are involved, but to take something like that we would call a commentary, and then take the original text of the Four Noble Truths, the Dhammacakka Sutta, get a copy of the, if you can read English or Pali or whatever. I don't think they have the Pali canon in Latvian. But what you do is you take the original, you take a commentary, and you start to get the theoretical formulation in your mind. And that's a very important part of understanding Buddhism, because your intellect needs that kind of a clarity.
Un, teiksim, jāpaslavē šī te grāmata, cilvēki ir izteikuši atzinīgas vārdas par to. Un, teiksim, šāda te mācība, lai to varētu pasniegt, faktiski ir jāņem oriģinālais teksts, tad komentārs par šo oriģinālo tekstu, un tas ir skaidri jāizklāst, lai rodas skaidrs priekšstats par to, kas tajā ir apspriests.
So in this retreat, I don't know where I'll be tomorrow, but right now I just wanted to get one very simple and profound idea across is the profundity of the awakened mind and what that means.
Bet šī retrīta laikā es vēlētos jo sevišķi izcelt šo vienu domu proti par to, cik ļoti spēcīga un svarīga ir šī skaidrā apzināšanās.
And so I, you know, I offered various analogies, and one I was trying to remember one of the many analogies that Ajahn Chah offered. He was asked once, and what meditation do you do? And I was, Venerable Jnana and I were discussing this, but he gave an answer. He said, "Well, what do? I just leave the mind where it always is. I'm like a tree. I'm like a tree. All kinds of interesting creatures come and land in the tree. They stay for a while. They go away. Things grow on it. But does the tree know itself?" And that was his answer. That was his meditation.
Anjanam Čāreiz jautāja, kāda ir viņa meditācija, uz ko viņš atbildēja, ka viņš ir kā viņš ir kā koks, viņš tad kokā atlido daudzi un dažādi radījumi, tur ir kādu laiku un tad dodās prom, bet vai koks apzinās, kas viņš ir, tāda bija viņa atbilde.
And Ajahn Chah was very good at these sort of enigmatic statements, which made you couldn't really, you kind of had to really come, oh, what's he talking about? It really made you kind of, because you have great faith in the man, you figure, yeah, he's probably done, yeah, he's probably enlightened, so why is he saying it this way?
Un Ajahn Chah ļoti padevās šādi te mīklaini izteikumi, un tā kā cilvēkiem bija liela paļaušanās uz viņu un ticība viņam, jo bija diezgan redzams vai skaidrs vai šķietams, ka viņš ir sasniedzis apskaidrību. Tad tas lika pārdomāt, ko viņš īsti ar to gribēja teikt un kāpēc viņš tā teica.
Venerable Jnana Dasa was reminding what I hadn't seen, where a similar kind of thing, where Ajahn Chah said, well, I leave the mind where it is. I'm like a pond. All kinds of frogs and fish and things come in the pond and things grow in it, but does the pond know itself?
Un tāpat,
same kind of idea.
Arī līdzīgs izteikums bija, ka es esmu kā ezers vai dīķis, kurā ir daudz dažādi dzīvnieki, zīvis, vārdis un tā tālāk. Un tas viss nāk un apciemo šo ezeru.
So if you take that literally, Ajahn Chah was a pond. Your mind can't compute, so you need imagination.
Un ja mēs to uztveram burtiski, tad tas mums īsti nebūs skaidrs, un tad mums tas ir jāuztver pārnestā nozīmē.
So I've used this image of the axis and the rim, or space and form, or pure presence, receptive presence, and pointing to this, the mystery of conscious awareness, where you can know objects. I can know I feel hot, or I can feel cold, or I feel happy, or I feel sad, but you cannot know the knowing. You can only be the knowing.
Un man patīk izmantot šo te līdzību ar ratu un tā asi, ar telpu un formu, un norādīt uz šo īpašo vietu, ka mēs varam apzināties, ka mums ir karsti vai ir kādas citas sajūtas. Mēs varam zināt, bet mēs nezinām, kas zina.
So our attention usually is preoccupied with objects. And by objects, usually, those of you who know the Pali, the five khandhas, the objects are bodily feelings, mental structures, memories, hot, cold, sweet, sour, beautiful odors, the whole sense experience. All those are objects in awareness, objects to awareness, objects of consciousness. And our attention is usually just preoccupied with those.
Un mūsu apziņa parasti ir pārņemta ar šiem dažādajiem objektiem un tiem no jums, kas zina daudz vairāk, tās ir šīs piecas skandas, valodā runājot, un tas ietver visas visus apziņas objektus, prāta objektus, formas un tā tālāk. Un mūsu uzmanība ir tik pārņemta ar šiem objektiem, ka tā neredz neko vairāk.
And so a lot of the teaching is pointing to the fact that as long as your attention is on objects, because objects are always subject to change, because you cannot control them, because they're dependent on other causes and factors, you'll never find fulfillment. You might find pleasure for a while, but you'll never find what the Buddha found, this deeper peace, this the deathless peace, as it were, by focusing on objects. So you have to begin to see, well, it's not about objects. It's not about objects.
Un liela daļa mācību norāda uz to, ka ja mēs tikai fokusējamies uz šiem objektiem, tad mēs nespēsim sasniegt un nonākt pie tā miera un stāvokļa, ko sasniedza Buda, tāpēc, ka šie objekti ir atkarīgi no cēloņiem, tie ir nepastāvīgi, tie visu laiku mainās.
And so the teaching is to like, it's like to notice that all objects indicate one thing, and that there is awareness. Now, when our attention is on objects, what we're trying to do is we're trying to find, get all the objects right so I'm comfortable and happy and I have pleasure. And as much as we try to do that, sometimes it comes together, but most of the time it's very unsatisfactory.
Un vairumā gadījumu, kad mēs cenšamies salikt šos objektus tādā daudzumā un kārtībā, lai mēs jūtamies labi un ērti, tas mums neizdodas. Reizēm tas var izdoties, bet tā notiek ārkārtīgi reti.
And yet we have to do it. I mean, we have to eat, we have to put, you know, pay for the mortgage, we have to put gas in the car, to take care of kids. So we need to be engaged in the realm of objects, but the realm of objects is limited. It's not bad, it's just very, very limited. And the realization of the deathless is a subtle turning away from objects back to the kind of ultimate subject of awareness.
Un tomēr tas mums ir jādara, jo mums kaut kā ir jāpēd, kaut kā ir jāatmaksā aizņēmumi, kaut kā ir jāielai benzīnas bakā un tam līdzīgi. Tas viss ir nepieciešams, bet vienlaikus tas ir sekundārs attiecībā pret šo nemirstošā apzināšanos, un tas ir tāds smalkāka lieta, kas mums ir jāapzinās.
And the Four Noble Truths are what they're pointing to is that our desire for objects, our desire for comfort and beauty and pleasure, there's nothing wrong with that desire. And we need to understand it and use it. If I didn't have desire for food, I wouldn't eat. It's boring. Then you have to go to the toilet, right? It's such a business, eating and all that. So food, if I didn't have the desire for food, I'd die. So it's biological, right, to have desire for food. And that's its proper realm. But to discover what the Buddha discovered, the deathless, the kind of this profound peace, we have to see that what desire does, it's always pulling you to objects. So the letting go of desire, coming back home to desirelessness, is the pathway to this liberation.
Un mums ir jāspēj saprast, ka tikai atlaižot objektus, mēs spēsim nonākt atpakaļ pie tā, kas nemirst. Un faktiski arī četras cēlās patiesības runā par šo tēmu, ka ja mēs esam pārņemti ar šiem objektiem, tas varbūt arī nav nekas slikts, bet mēs tajos nespējam atrast paliekošu gandarījumu.
So this is why I think I'm suggesting to you, just listen, but listen non-resistance, non-becoming, non-desire, anticipation. Listen in this pure way, in a kind of desireless way.
Un tāpēc es arī iesaku jums ieklausīties, bet ieklausīties šādā veidā, kas ir bez vēlēšanās, bez pieķeršanās, bez vēlēšanās kaut ko paturēt.
So like I don't know how this works in Latvian again, but I use the word like desirelessness, and I just put that in consciousness, desirelessness, and that has an effect on. It's like a mirror. If I'm, you know, if I'm trying to attain to some kind of experience, and I say desirelessness, that gives me a mirror. Oh yeah, step back, just let it come to you. I don't know how that would work in the Latvian language.
Ko angļu valodā saprotošie saka par vārdu nevēlēšanās. Neaukšana.
Desirelessness. No desire.
Neaukšana varbūt.
Yeah. But anyway, you get the picture. It's hard to do, isn't it? I mean, I suggested to you in a sitting, that desirelessness. And you get a feeling, right? You just listen, your mind's clear. But it's really hard to sustain that. You know, the mind just picks up an idea and just runs with it. So the idea of, also the idea I was presenting, preoccupation, where we're preoccupied with objects of thought and so on. Oh, that's long, sorry.
Tad izmantosim vārdu brīvību no vēlmēm. Es varu ieteikt šo vārdu brīvību no vēlmēm meditācijas laikā, bet mēs varam novērot, kas mūsu prātā notiek. Nav nemaz tik viegli to uzreiz dabūt gatavu, jo mūsu prāts jau kaut kam grib sakot un pieķerties.
If you understand that principle, that like whatever the Buddha realized, it also has to be timeless. It can't be tomorrow. Because tomorrow would always be like, I have to get this tomorrow. So it has to be timeless. That means it has to be here and now, desireless. So you start to use language like this as a contemplative. You start to use language as a way, as a suggestion in right attitude.
Un mums ir jāsaprot, ka tas, ko sasniedz Buda, tam bija jābūt ārpus laika. Jo tas nevar attiekties tikai uz rītdienu. Tam ir jābūt kaut kam, kas nav ierobežots laikā. Un tad mēs kā meditētāji varam izmantot šos te pavadienus vai padarīt savu skaidrāku, par ko mēs meditējam.
You have Eckhart Tolle here? Has he been in Latvian?
Yes.
Translated, yeah?
Yeah?
Okay, the power of now, how do you say that in Latvian?
Tagadnes spēks.
Yeah, same thing. But really now, not tomorrow now. Power of now, timeless, non-becoming, desirelessness. And you start to introduce this language as a kind of beginning in your practice, desirelessness. And your mind begins to relax into this kind of receptive awareness.
Mēs varam izmantot šos vārdus, kas norāda uz šo esamību ārpus laika vai neierobežotu laikā. Kā piemēram, tieši šis brīdis vai šeit un tagad, un tieši šeit un tagad, nevis rīt kaut kād. Un jā, mēs varam izmantot šos te valodas pavadienus kā norādes.
And to me, again, that's not theory, you know, but it's very pragmatic. So language is if you do use language really skillfully, it is very powerful for making suggestions in your practice that bring you back to this very simple, open, aware mind.
Un priekš manis tā nav teorija, tas ir visnotaļ praktiski. Un mēs varam iemācīties lietot valodu prasmīgi, lai radītu iespaidu savā prātā.
So there's the language about awareness, then there's the language about objects. So objects are changing, unsatisfactory, not me, not mine. That's the language you have around the objects.
Tātad šie bija vārdi un terminoloģija, kas bija saistīta ar apziņu un apzināšanos, Savukārt tā valoda un terminoloģija, kas ir saistīta ar objektiem, ir mainīgi, nepastāvīgi un nepiederīgi.
And that's the language of letting go. That's the language of non-grasping.
Un tā ir valoda, kas apraksta nepieķeršanos un spēju atlaist.
So let's say, like Ajahn Chah would stress a lot, it's uncertain. So let's say I have a perception of a person. I think they're really, really great. I've only met them once. I have a perception they're really, really great. That's a perception. That's an object. And Ajahn Chah would say, my net, it's uncertain. And as soon as I say, it's uncertain, I'm not denying that perception. I'm saying, you don't know. Be the witness. Be aware.
Un Ajahnam Chah patika lietot frāzi, tas nav noteikts. Un, piemēram, es varu pirmo reizi satikt kādu cilvēku, un man rodas patīkams priekšstats par viņu, bet Ajahnam Chah par to teikt, ka tu nevar par to būt drošs, tas nav noteikts.
So on one hand, you have language which describes sense experience, sense consciousness, objective, the objects of consciousness. And on the other hand, you have this language which alludes to the Buddha's enlightenment, but it's really beyond language. So you have like uncreated, unoriginated, unformed, deathless. Very difficult words to translate, I'm sure.
Un tātad mums ir viena valodas daļa, kas apraksta šo objektu sfēru, un otra valodas un vārdu daļa, kas cenšas norādīt uz to, ko sasniedz Buda. Tātad tas, kas nemirst, tas, kas nav dzimis, kas ir ārpus pārmaiņām un tā tālāk.
Very difficult words to translate, because it's really beyond language.
Tie ir grūti vārdi arī ko iztulkot, jo tas patiesībā ir aiz valodas.
So, like, here's one for you. The Buddha would say that pleasure is unsatisfactory.
Viens piemērs, ko Buddha teica, ka bauda ir neapmierinoša, vai bauda nespēja apmierināt.
Or suffering is dukkha. Pleasure is dukkha, maybe in Nepali.
Like, bauda ir dukkha.
So you think, well, pleasure, what do you mean, pleasure? I want pleasure, that's good fun. It is, pleasure is nice. I prefer pleasure to pain, you do too. But pleasure is not deathless. So we say, pleasure is as it is. If you get it, be grateful. If you don't make it a problem. But pleasure is not deathless. It is born and it dies and it's dependent on conditions. So in that sense, pleasure is unsatisfactory.
Un mēs varētu jautāt, no kā tad tā? Bauda taču ir laba lieta. Mēs dodam priekšroku baudai, nevis kaut kādām sāpēm vai ciešanām. Bet bauda ir nosacījumu radīta tā. Rodas un tā izgaist, tā paiet. Un tādā ziņā bauda nav mūžīga.
So, like, take the first time you fell in love.
Varam atcerēties to brīdi, kad mēs pirmoreiz iemīlējāmies.
It seemed permanent, didn't it?
Šķita, ka tas tā būs mūži, vai ne?
I don't know you, but you know, the mind just my first time, my mind went crazy.
Es nezinu, kā bija jūsu skatījumā, bet kad tas notika ar mani, manas prāts vienkārši kļūt tejot raks.
That was many, many years ago. And, you know, at the time it seemed, well, this will never change. This is eternal.
Tas bija daudz, daudz gadus atpakaļ, un tombrīd tas likās, ka tas nekad nemainīsies.
Now, you know, if someone said to me, this love you're feeling is unsatisfactory, I'd say, rubbish. I'm really happy.
Ja kāds man teikt, ka tā mīlestība, ko tu izjūti, ka tā nav apmierinoša, tad es teiktu muļķības. Es jūtos patiešām laimīgs.
One year later, the disaster struck.
Bet katastrofa sākās pēc gada.
And just as high as I went down into hell.
Un tikpat augstu, cik es biju nonācis, es tikpat zem nokritu.
And the pain was really painful.
Un sāpes bija patiešām liels.
And I thought that was eternal.
Un es domāju, ka arī tās būs mūžīgas.
I'll always be this way.
Es vienmēr būšu tik nelaimīgs.
You don't do that many times in your life.
Tas ar jums nenotiek.
Make that mistake.
Nenotiek pārāk daudz reizes jūsu dzīvē.
Well, that's not wrong to love someone. Right? It's not wrong to love someone and so on. But you realize that that emotional feeling is subject to change. It's its nature, so it's unsatisfactory.
Tur nav nekā nepareiz, ka mēs kādu mīlam, bet mēs arī saprotam, ka šī emocionālā mīlestības sajūta ir pakļauta pārmaiņām.
And then when it changes, and you're wise, you don't say to the person, you changed, you disappointed me.
Un kad šīs pārmaiņas notiek, un jūs esat pietiekoši gudrs, jūs nesakat, ka, lūk, tu mainījies, un tāpēc es tagad esmu neapmierināts.
So as pleasure and pain come forth in our lives, if our refuge is in objects, then we're very much subject to the movements of pleasure and pain. But if our refuge is in knowing, this is pleasure, it feels good, but it will change. This is sorrow, it feels sorrowful, but it will change. Then more and more we incline towards the spiritual center, and we're not pulled out onto that wheel all the time.
Un ja mēs sakojam tikai šīm baudas pieredzēm un nepatikas pieredzēm, pieķeroties tām, tad mēs visu laiku ejam šos kāpumus un kritumus. Savukārt, ja mēs vairāk tuvojamies šim apzināšanās punktam, tad mēs pamanām, kā mēs piedzīvojam tādu pieredzi un kāda ir tā sajūta, bet mēs neesam šīm sajūtām pakļaut un no tām atkarīgi.
So again, when we chant Buddhang Saranangacchami, I take refuge in Buddha, it's this awake mind which knows pleasure, which knows pain, which knows how to respond. Like we can use pleasure, like with my mother. My mom couldn't go shopping, and I wanted her, because she loves clothing. She couldn't go shopping. She loved clothing. And so I tried to figure out, well, how can I make her happy? So what I did is I... the things I do. I got some catalogs of women's fashion. And then I go through with mom these catalogs. She can't read. She can hardly see. I'm reading out to her. She, that looks good. And so then we'd order it online. My brother would pay for it. And I'd get her a sweater or something. She'd be really happy. It was great.
Manai mātei ļoti patika iepirkties. Un man bija ļoti žēl, ka viņa nevarēja guļot uz slimības gultas to vairs izdarīt. Un tāpēc man ļoti gribējās viņu iepriecināt un apšīs manas idejas. Es paņēmu dažādus sieviešu apģērbu katalogus un mēs tos šķirstījām kopā ar manu māti. Viņa gan nespēja lasīt un knapi spēja kaut ko saskatīt, bet es viņai lasīju priekšā un tad viņa teica, ka nu, jā, tas varētu būt kaut kas ļoti jauks un tad mēs to izvēlējāmies, pasūtījām tiešsaistē, mans brālis par to samaksāja, un tad mēs nopirkām, piemēram, svīteru, un mana māte bija ļoti iepriecināta par to.
So pleasure was really important for her, because her life, her physical life was so unpleasant, you know. So pleasure can be useful. Like, we also, organized a hairdresser to come. Hairdresser? Just shave your head. What do you need a hairdresser? So she would sit with this hairdresser and get these permanent curls. It's torture. This 95-year-old woman getting this. I said, if you want to do it, okay. But it made her feel great. So pleasure had its place. It uplifted her mind.
Tāpēc baudas un patikas pieredzēja ar savu vietu. Un, man, piemēram, manai mātei tas bija nepieciešams, jo viņai bija gan daudz ciešanu tāpat. Un tāpat arī mēs uzaicinājām pie mums atnākt frizieri. Un varētu viņu jautāt, nu, kāda no tā viss ir jēga, varbūt vienkāršāk ir maskot galvu. Bet ne, manai mātei patika, ka arī 95 gadu vecumā, ka viņai tiek likti ilgbieļi.
So sometimes, you know, Buddhism sounds so kind of, you know, you just have to meditate all the time, sort of really heavy, but we can use wisdom, we can bring beauty into our lives and so on, but I think if you understand the aspiration, you understand the aspiration that the Buddha pointed to, then you see the limits of those things. You don't deny them, you know. You don't say it's bad, but you see they're limited. But I want to discover the unlimited. That's what I'm really interested in.
Un var šķist, ka viss, ko buddhismas saka, ir vienkārši mums ir jāsēž un jāmeditē. Un nekā priecīgāk tur nav, bet tā gloži nav. Ir vieta arī priekam mūsu dzīvē, bet mums ir jāsaprot tie ierobežojumi, kāda ir baudai un pārējiem objektiem.
One last story, just because so it puts you to bed. Little bedtime story. Ajahn Chah story. It was my first year with Ajahn Chah. And in the monastery, like I was saying the other day, there was no sensory gratification except one meal a day. And that was very poor food.
Tad jau pēdējais stāsts pirms mūvētiešanas. Kā es jau minēju, manā pirmajā mūka kārtas gadā, kad es biju Ajahn Chah klosterī, tad vienīgā faktiski izprieca dienā bija nepārāk bagātīgā maltīte.
So, you know, there was just nothing except this one meal a day. But there used to be, or there was a kind of there was a chalkboard in the monastery, and quite often we would get invitations from wealthy people in the town, wealthy merchants, and they would invite 7-9 monks to go have a meal in town. So the names of the monks who were chosen, we were 50 monks, would be on there.
Bet, ja neskaita to, tad bija arī tāfelīte, uz kuras tika uzrakstīti to mūku vārdi, kurus bagāti sponsori ielūdza uz Maltīti pilsētā.
And I was a novice then, and I thought, my name will never get on there. Senior monks would get that. And one day my name was on there. I couldn't sleep all night.
Really? Es biju jauniņais mūks, un es domāju, ka mūks vārds nekad neparādīsies, jo parasti tur bija tikai vecāko mūku vārdi, bet tad pēkšņi kādā dienā tur parādījās mans vārds, un to nakt es nespēju aizmigt aiz sajūsmas.
So then, I went to the meal, and when you go to one of these meals, the people, they've prepared food for a large lay congregation as well. So there's enough food for 100 people, but these big plates of food are passed from monk to monk. You know, so it's not like here in the kitchen where people, it's like you have a whole plate in front of you.
Un tur tā pārtikta sēdiens ir ne tikai priekš mūkiem, tur ir arī laicīgie cilvēki, un tas nav tā kā šeit, kad te tiek porcijai salikts ēdienas, tur mūkiem tiek pasniegt veselu šķīvi ēdienu.
So as these things went by, wow, look at that, and I just got more and more greedy, and I just put more and more things in my bowl. My bowl was full.
Un kad šie daudzie dažādie ēdienu šķīvī tika pasniegti man, es kļuvu arvien alkatīgāks, un man ziedojuma bļoda kļuva arvien pilnāk un pilnāk, līdz tam bija ar kaudzi.
I was just totally heedless, and all the sweets are on top. I couldn't get at the curries.
They're at the bottom. Es tevi nevarēju apstāties. Es nespēju pat tikt līdz bļodas apakšai.
So, it's the worst meal I've had in my life. And I'm sitting in the car in the back. Ajahn Chah's in front. And I'm feeling really, I'm a terrible monk. Terrible, you know, I'm getting really guilty about all this.
Un faktiski tā izvērtās par man briesmīgāko maltīti manā mūžā. Un atpakaļ ceļā es braucu vienā mašīnā ar Ajahn Chah un sēdēju tajā aizmuguras krēslā un domāju, cik es esmu briesmīgs monks.
And, you know, I was really, really depressed. And Ajahn Chah, he turns around, hey, V, how are you doing? What's the problem?
Un tad Ajahn Chah apgriezās un paskatījās uz mani un vaicāja, kas ar tev noticis?
And I sort of said, oh, Lompo, I still love food. And he said, yeah, so do I. And that was such a kind thing to do for me.
Un tad es viņam atbildēju, Lompor, es joprojām ļoti mīlu ēdienu, un uz ko viņš atbildēja, jā, mēs arī, un tā bija ļoti jauka atbilde.
He just lifted my whole spirit. He didn't say, you greedy pig. Because that's what I felt like.
Un tādējādi viņš pacēla man garu, jo viņš man neteica, ak, tu alkatīngā cūka tāds, jo tas bija tas, kā es jūtos.
Yeah, he's very, very compassionate. He just said, yeah, you like food, it's natural.
Tā kā tas bija ļoti līdzjūtīgi. Viņš teica, tev ir švēdienas, tas ir ļoti dabiski.
So, another bedtime story.
Jā, tā kā.
So, we'll do that another time. Let's finish with the chanting then.
I'm back to my denial.
Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Bhutang Bhagavantang Abhivadeni Savakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhamma Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakato